Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. More than a decade ago, Barack Obama named Joe Biden as his running mate. It was considered a strategic choice. Biden brought experience and age to the ticket and helped balance then-Senator Obama's progressive message of change. Now, as the presumptive Democratic nominee, it's Joe Biden's turn to pick a VP candidate. His choice will say a lot about what kind of president he wants to be. Will it also help energize his campaign and help him win in November? This hour on Point, Biden's running mate, why his choice matters and why it might not. With us from Dayton, Ohio, is Christopher Devine. He's a political science professor at the University of Dayton. He's also the co-author with Kyle C. Kopko of the new book, Do Running Mates Matter? The Influence of Vice Presidential Elections, as well as The VP Advantage, How Running Mates Influence Home State Voting in Presidential Elections. And it's great to have you, Christopher Devine. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this conversation. And we're going to get to Biden's shortlist, and we're going to hear from various people about who he should pick, and including a bunch of our listeners. But I want to ask you about this rite that we go through every 4 years. Lots of excitement, lots of speculation, in particular among sort of political junkies, let's say. Lots of excitement. Now, you pop a few myths about the importance of this choice. So start there. What's the biggest myth about the importance of the VP pick?
So I have to be a little careful. I don't want to describe anything quite as a myth, but I will say there are some things that are either overblown or they're really taken for granted, and people will state things without any evidence for them, or at least not strong enough evidence for it. And for that matter, it has been a ton of research on vice presidential candidates' electoral effects. Our book is the first one that really covers that comprehensively. So the big one is the perception that the running mate choice is so important that it could very easily tip the election. Mm. You know, the election will hinge on the choice of a running mate. And that really overstates the case. I'm not saying it's impossible that a running mate could end up making the difference in a really, really close election. Of course, it's hard to tell exactly when those elections are coming, and no one wants to take any election for granted. But when you think of the certainty that a vice president in office will make a substantial impact on the administration, on its successes, its failures, and you balance that against the uncertainty, really the unlikelihood, that a vice presidential candidate will actually tip the election. I think there's a big gap there that, frankly, a lot of us, and hey, I'm guilty of it too. I'm a political junkie, no doubt. but it's very easy for us to get so caught up in the parlor game element of this that we start imagining effects that just haven't really occurred and aren't likely to occur, and really lose sight of the importance of this as a governing choice, mm-hmm. and for that matter, a window into the future presidency. The other thing I'd mention just quickly is, again, I want to be careful not to call it a myth, but I would say the home state advantage is one in particular that gets a lot of discussion whenever these choices come up.
This is the idea that a vice presidential running mate could help deliver his or her state.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. And it's often just assumed that that's going to happen. And the evidence for that is pretty weak. There is some evidence against it the other way that's out there too. And I want to, recognize that. But our research, what we've done recently, is the most updated analysis of this, as well as a recent journal article. And, we find that if you look at elections, we're able to get data from 1952 to 2016, even better evidence from 2008, 2016. We do not find any general home state advantage. We cannot say with any confidence, statistically speaking, that there is, in general, a home state advantage. And even if we look at recent cases, like let's say Tim Kaine in Virginia in 2016, which I think was the rationale in some ways for choosing him, or at least one of the topics of conversation, and that didn't pan out by our estimates, nor for that matter, as I'm sure we'll get into at some point, other things like, you know, Cain supposedly was going to bring along Catholics and maybe even Latino voters because he was a fluent Spanish speaker. And, you know, people get really carried away with this and thinking that all these little things are going to make such a difference. You know, Tim Kaine fluently speaks Spanish. It's going to change how Latinos vote. No, there's no evidence that it did.
And no evidence, right.
I think we could use a reality check.
I mean, I guess going back in history, one of the examples of the home state advantage that's often talked about, and you have to go quite a ways back in American history, is John F. Kennedy picking Lyndon Baines Johnson, right, to bring him Texas. And that seemed to work out. But other than that, not lots of examples of that, right?
Or did it with Lyndon Johnson. So actually, we have a chapter on this in our previous book. This is my other book with Kyle Kopko of Elizabethtown College. So the VP Advantage, and we have a chapter in there looking at survey data from that year. And in fact, when you look at, and this matches with internal campaign polls, which we also analyzed there, and other polls that were taking place that year, that Johnson was actually less popular in the South than in the North. And in fact, other candidates like Henry Cabot Lodge from Massachusetts, believe it or not, across multiple polls, was more popular than Johnson was. And we find no evidence that positive feeling toward Johnson helped in Texas or even helped in the South generally.
I want to ask you about sort of one of the sort of not so much a myth, but I think when every 4 years we get to the point where there's lots of speculation and sort of the parlor game among political junkies, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? And then we are reminded that the vice presidential pick isn't the sort of pivotal decision or the pivotal issue around which voters make make up their mind. But I would argue that, or let me just ask you this, is it different this year because of the extraordinary events the country is facing? Because Biden has been essentially locked down and out of sight. We haven't had traditional campaign events across the country, all of which makes his expected announcement about a VP pick, which I guess we're expecting in early August, it feels more significant this time around. That's my feeling. I wonder what you think about that.
I don't think you're wrong about that. I would tend to agree. My first impulse is to think, you know, isn't it every election that we say that this is the most important election of our lifetime and that this is the year the VP is going to make a difference and all these kinds of things. And then the next time we say the same thing. But I get your point. I take it and I do tend to agree, actually. In this case, I think it's particularly important for a couple of reasons. You point to some there. But also, you know, given Joe Biden's age, he's going to be the oldest presidential nominee and potentially the oldest president to take office. given that fact, health problems he's had in the past, really going back decades, actually serious health issues. There's the potential. It sounds morbid to say it, but there's the potential that maybe he doesn't last for the term or isn't able to fully do those duties for the whole time. Let's hope, you know, that that's not an issue. But there's also the case, the fact that given his age, maybe he does one term or, you know, whatever, we'll see. But he is helping to set the direction for the Democratic Party in the future. And we really, really saw that on full display in the primaries, that there's, we could say the same thing about the Republican Party, at least, you know, maybe up until recently. But there seems to be something of an identity crisis in the Democratic Party. Does it want to go in a more moderate direction, in a more liberal progressive direction? I think that's still being decided. And, you know, Biden certainly can't determine that future, but he could put, thumb on the scales for the future, because whoever he puts front and center as a running mate, if that person gets elected vice president or just gets the prominence of being the running mate, that person's young enough, that person in 4 or 8 years could be the next leader of the Democratic Party, or at least have an advantage in getting the nomination.
Mm. Well, I want to play a little tape from some of our listeners. We put out our number yesterday, and we've heard from a lot of listeners about who they'd like to see Joe Biden pick as his running mate. So here's Randy from Burnside, Kentucky, making a case for California Senator Kamala Harris in this voicemail.
She's well deserving of it. She's very well astute, and California has the largest electoral college votes of any state in the union. And I'm down here in Kentucky, old Trump's revered, and I think that would be an excellent pick.
So that's Randy from Burnside, Kentucky, making a case for Kamala Harris. And we should just mention, Christopher, some of the names. Kamala Harris, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren is said to still be in the running. Keisha Lance Bottom, she's the mayor of Atlanta. Val Demings, representative from Florida. Susan Rice, a former national security advisor and ambassador to the UN under President Obama. Tammy Duckworth, senator from Illinois. Tammy Baldwin, senator from Wisconsin. Gretchen Whitmer, governor of Michigan. Stacey Abrams, of course, former Democratic leader in the Georgia House of Representatives. Even Gina Raimondo, governor of Rhode Island, who'd be sort of a moderate choice, has been talked about as being in the running. So, Christopher, before we go to the break, I want to put you on the spot. Who do you think makes sense for Joe Biden to pick?
So, you know, I think he's got a great list of choices there. You know, it's hard to make a really terrible pick out of those. I will say I think there are better and worse choices, or at least ones that more clearly make sense. And let me just stress one point here. The big finding from our research is that the choice of a running mate, it doesn't necessarily get people to vote for a vice president, but it gets the, it changes how they think about the presidential candidate. So job number one is to pick someone who's clearly qualified. Otherwise, you undermine judgments, or excuse me, undermine perceptions of the presidential candidate's judgment. You can also shape perceptions of ideology and so on. So that's the basis on which I say that Kamala Harris makes a lot of sense. She has plenty of political experience. She was elected in San Francisco as district attorney in 2004. She was elected in 2010 as attorney general of the state. She was elected to the Senate in 2016, the U.S. Senate. So she has a range of experience at the state and national level. She's also someone who has presidential experience as a presidential candidate, which I think counts for quite a bit, actually. It puts you on that stage and gets people thinking of you as a potential president. So if we think of experience not just as what's on paper, but how people perceive you, the fact that you ran for president and had a fairly high profile run, as Kamala Harris did, I think that puts you in good shape to be seen as someone who actually could be president. And Joe Biden wouldn't have to spend a lot of time explaining why, you know, she makes sense in that role. She's also someone who I think is hard to pin down ideologically. Other candidates that you mentioned, you know, let's say Gina Raimondo is very much associated with the moderate wing of the party. Elizabeth Warren, the liberal wing of the party. Kamala Harris is not clearly identified with either one. And so I think you can keep both sides, if not fully happy, at least relatively happy going into the campaign.
All right. A vote there for Kamala Harris. Christopher Devine, stand by. We're talking about Joe Biden's pick for vice president. Up next, we'll hear the case for some other candidates as well. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about Joe Biden's pick for vice president. I'm here with Christopher Devine. He's a political science professor at the University of Dayton. He's also co-author with Kyle C. Kopko of the new book, Do Running Mates Matter? The Influence of Vice Presidential Elections. And Christopher, I want to play a couple of cuts of tape from our listeners. Here's Jack from Framingham, Massachusetts, on what he's looking for in a vice presidential nominee.
Who should Joe Biden pick as his vice presidential running mate? Number one, who can help him defeat Donald Trump? Number four, who can best help him defeat Donald Trump? Number seven, don't forget number four.
Okay, that's Jack from Framingham, Massachusetts. And Christopher, we received a lot of voicemails from listeners for this hour, and the plurality said they want Joe Biden to pick someone who's not even on his short list of candidates and who doesn't want to be a vice president, including former First Lady Michelle Obama. Here's Louise, also from Massachusetts.
I think Michelle Obama would be terrific. She's known throughout the country, and I think it would be an absolute addition to the ticket.
By the way, we also got a few calls for another woman decidedly not in the running, Oprah Winfrey. But Christopher, a quick question about this. What does your research tell you about what voters want or sort of how they think about this question?
So voters want experience, most of all. That is the thing that they emphasize. They actually emphasize very little, to the extent there's polling on this, and that's kind of limited. But they'll emphasize – they do not emphasize wanting kind of electoral advantages. They mostly focus on, you know, is this person going to be able to do the job? Because the danger really is that you're going to choose someone, whether you're Joe Biden or someone else in a campaign, you're going to choose someone just to win that election. And then afterwards, this person's not really up to the job, or at least is not going to be, as helpful as I want to be. Maybe not someone I would work very well with. So they have to be really, really careful of that. And voters also, you know, if you ask them going into the campaign, hey, is this going to be important to you? The choice of a running mate, consistently through the years, the last, 20 years or so, 80-85% of people will say, yes, the choice of a running mate is important to me. You ask them after the election how important it was and compare that to other factors, it ranks low on the list. And in fact, even more so, there's if you ask them just open-ended fashion, just I'm not going to put words in your mouth. You tell me what you're thinking. What influenced your choice in this election? Okay, this is going back to the 1950s. Less than 5% respondents in these surveys will say anything about the vice presidential selection. So it seems so important going in, and it can be really important, especially if you mess it up. But most of the time, if you just pick someone who's competent and well liked enough, they're not going to hurt you. They may help you a little bit, but you are not going to get waves of people after the election saying, oh, yeah, that was what did it for me. It was the choice of a running mate.
Well, speaking of messing it up, I want to talk about some of the decisions that kind of messed it up, but I'm going to hold that for a little bit later because I want to go now to South Carolina. I first met State Representative Wendy Brawley last year while I was reporting on Senator Elizabeth Warren's presidential campaign in South Carolina. Wendy Brawley represents District 70, which includes Richland and Sumter counties. She's the co-founder of Imara Woman Magazine, which highlights the achievements of people of color in South Carolina. She endorsed Senator Elizabeth Warren in the Democratic primaries, and now she's hoping Joe Biden will select Warren as his running mate. And Representative Brawley, good to have you on Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Anthony, for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you again. Tell me why Senator Warren makes sense.
Well, I think Senator Warren makes sense for a lot of reasons. I think this is going to be a different kind of race this year. There is a lot of interest in politics among people who probably have never really considered themselves a political person. They're watching, they're protesting, they're getting engaged at the local level as well as at the national level. So I think this is a different kind of election. And Senator Warren's profile as a candidate when she ran was raised quite a bit across the country for those people who had not been as familiar with her. And I think she brings to the ticket the kind of balance that Joe Biden will need to engage the progressive wing of the party and also to comfort those individuals who consider themselves moderate, but still want equity for those populations of persons who have heretofore been left out of the political process. So I think she really adds a lot to the ticket.
Representative Brawley, I want to ask you about this, and that is Joe Biden's under a good deal of pressure from lots of folks to pick not only a woman, but a woman of color. And it's interesting talking to you in South Carolina about this because, South Carolina, African-American voters in South Carolina, more than any other group, really revived Joe Biden's campaign. Until then, you know, his campaign was pretty much the walking dead. So there is a feeling among lots of some African-Americans anyway that, you know, this makes sense at this moment in America to have not only a female running mate, but a running mate of color. What do you say to that argument?
Well, I think it's a strong argument. I mean, I don't doubt that there are a lot of people who feel that having a female of color will be the best option for Joe Biden. I happen to believe that many African-American women in particular across this country are looking more substantively to the issues and how the candidate that he selects as his running mate will fare on the issues that matter to the Black community. And you know, if you, even if in South Carolina, as you talk to people about the race between Biden and Warren, people liked Warren. A lot of people of color really liked her, but there was an affinity to Biden because of his connection to President Obama, who I worked for as a volunteer when he ran both times. So I understand that, but I think this campaign is about more than just the color of the vice presidential candidate. And really it's more to the ideals of that candidate, how they stand on the issues, because people are going to be very probative this time. And I don't know if you recall, but there was some concern even with some of the African-American community, particularly the progressive wing of the party, about Kamala Harris's record as it related to crime and punishment.
That's right.
And so I think people are going to be strategically looking at, just as your previous guest said, who is the best person to help Joe Biden and how can he activate that wing of the party that he is going to need to win. And I think someone like Elizabeth Warren, I think Elizabeth Warren has that type of ability to actually pull the party together and make certain that the base of the party, the progressive base, is activated.
All right. Well, Representative Wendy Brawley, she's a Democratic representative in South Carolina, represents District 70, which includes Richland and Sumter counties. Wendy Brawley, thank you so much for joining us. We're very grateful to hear from you today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Christopher Devine, let me turn to you. You made the case before we heard from Representative Brawley that Kamala Harris made the most sense. What do you think about Wendy Brawley's argument for Elizabeth Warren?
Yeah, I think Representative Brawley makes some good points about Elizabeth Warren, and I wouldn't, challenge that. I think Warren would be a good pick in a lot of ways. For one thing, she, like Harris, has been vetted on the national stage. As always with any presidential campaign, there are pros and cons. But overall, I think she's someone who most people would see without having it further explained to them that she is clearly qualified for that role. And she's also carved out this niche as a policy wonk. She's also someone who, although she had some sparring with Joe Biden in the past, seems to get along with him pretty well now, as far as we can tell. That always is the wild card in this, by the way, is the personal relationship. I should mention that, too. In fact, I should say that's also one reason why Harris could be a good choice, despite their high profile, collision at last summer's debate.
I'm glad you brought that up. Sorry to jump in, but just for listeners who may not recall, they had a pretty, in fact, we've got a little bit of a tape to play from that about Biden, Harris, and they really clashed over busing in America. And Kamala Harris, really took on Joe Biden in this debate. And so here's a part of their exchange and give you a sense of what it sounded like.
Do you agree today that you were wrong to oppose busing in America? Then,
no.
Do you agree?
I did not oppose busing in America. What I opposed is busing ordered by the Department of Education. That's what I opposed.
Well,
I
there
did
was
not
a
oppose.
Failure of states to integrate
no,
public
but,
schools in America. I was part of the second class to integrate Berkeley, California public schools almost two decades after Brown v. Board of Education.
Because your city council made that decision. It was a
so
local decision.
So that's where the federal government must step now, in.
So that was a pretty explosive moment in the campaign. It really put Kamala Harris, created a lot of buzz around her campaign. Christopher Devine, how does Biden, I don't want to say how does he recover from that, but doesn't that sort of, is that just the rough and tumble of the political campaign and candidates can just get over that and sort of throw their arms around each other and say, yeah, we're all sort of pitching for the same team, so I forgive you.
I think that's right, Anthony. You know, Joe Biden has been around politics for 50 years. He's been through presidential campaigns. He is used to having clashes and getting over them. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he can put this behind him. I've seen others say, well, the family was really hurt by this and they were blindsided, whatever. I think Joe Biden can put on his big boy pants and get over this. He has a pre-existing relationship with Kamala Harris. So his late son, Beau Biden, who was the Attorney General of Delaware, about a decade ago, was serving at the same time as Kamala Harris when she was Attorney General of California. And apparently they got on real well. Seems like that lasted into Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's relationship. And obviously they've partnered on some things during this campaign or whatever we call the current political moment. Right. They've done some things together online. So they seem to have a good relationship. And for that matter, turn it back to Warren. It seems like that relationship has recovered too. They had clashed previously over things involving consumer financial protection and back in days before she joined the Senate. But they seem to be okay now as far as we can tell. And, you know, often these choices do come down when you look at what presidential candidates say later on. Very often they do point to issues of chemistry or perceptions of loyalty and things like that. Those are the things that, as much as we focus on the credentials on paper, the electoral advantages, these are the things that are really hard to see into from our perspective. And ultimately, although there are a lot of influences from the party and elsewhere on the selection, ultimately it comes down to Joe Biden or whoever the presidential candidate is. It comes down to their choice of who they'd like to serve alongside during this campaign and for 4 or 8 years in the White House.
Christopher Devine, we're going to hear now a case for another candidate said to be on Joe Biden's shortlist. We're going to hear from Milton Kent. He's a professor of journalism at Morgan State University. He's the host of WYPR's Sports at Large, and he's putting his money on Representative Val Demings of Florida as Joe Biden's best bet. You can find a link to his op-ed for the Baltimore Sun about why he thinks Val Demings should be our next president on our website, onpointradio.org. And Milton, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Hello, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
So tell listeners, first of all, who Val Demings is and why you like her as a vice presidential pick.
Okay. Well, Val Demings is a two-term congresswoman from the, Orlando area. She was former police chief of Orlando. She was, I think, sort of came to national prominence during the impeachment trial in the Senate, where she was one of the House managers and was very forceful, very, spoke up very forcefully about impeaching President Trump. I believe she was the only non-attorney on the in the impeachment panel, on that panel. And I think she sort of rose to prominence in that regard. The reason I like her is sort of, there are multiple reasons to like her as a candidate. I think her background as a former police chief gives her appeal to moderates and to Republicans who might be on the fence about voting for a Democrat. I think the fact that, and you know, with all deference to Professor Devine, I think the Electoral College, her ability to perhaps deliver Florida or at least put Florida in play and make the Trump campaign have to use resources to spend money down there, makes her really attractive in that regard. I just think that she also represents, and Representative Brawley, you talked about this a little bit when she was with you. The African American female vote, the African American female voter, is usually the most reliable voter in the Democratic panoply, and I'm not sure that she, speaking as a monolith, so to speak, has ever really been represented properly in the electoral process. I think the opportunity to name someone who has credibility and could possibly be president, say as early as 2024, should be attractive to Joe Biden.
Hmm. Milton Kent, let me ask you one question. You mentioned that Val Demings, former police chief, I think you would describe her perhaps, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, as opposed to being a representative of the progressive wing of the party, she's more moderate. But the fact that she comes with this law enforcement background, given what's going on across the country around protests, around racial justice and police brutality, does that put her potentially out of step with this moment?
Oh, there's no question. And I think it's going to be a challenge. I mean, there are no perfect candidates, and I think she's certainly going to have to work to convince people, particularly people of color, people who are involved in the Black Lives Matter movement, that she is a part of them. But she started an op-ed in the Washington Post sort of throwing it right back at her former brethren in the police officer by police department by asking bluntly, what the hell are you doing? Mm. I think she'd be, I put it this way, I think her credibility in that category would certainly, I'll just say this, I think that she would neutralize any argument that, I think she would neutralize any argument that Republicans might make about the Democrats being soft on crime. And basically, if you're a person of color or you're a person in the Democratic circle, you have to ask yourself, okay, she may not be perfect, but is she better than what we have?
Right.
And I think the answer to that would be an overwhelming yes.
All right. Well, Milton Kent, he's a professor of journalism at Morgan State University. He's the host of WYPR Sports at Large, and he's putting his money on Representative Val Demings of Florida as Joe Biden's best bet for vice president. Milton, thank you so much for joining us today. We're very grateful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciated hearing from you. And listeners, we're talking about who should Joe Biden pick as his running mate, why it matters, and why it might not matter. Christopher Devine, stick with us. He'll be back after the break. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking about competitive Senate races across the country that could determine who controls Washington come November. We want to hear from you. Are you watching Senate races heat up in your state? Who has your vote and why? Tell us your story. Call us at 617-353-0683 and leave a message. That's for tomorrow's program. Again, talking about Senate races in your state. Give us a call at 617-353-0683 and leave a message. Right now, we're talking about Joe Biden's choices for vice presidential nominee. I'm here with Christopher Devine, a political science professor at the University of Dayton. He's co-author of Do Running Mates Matter? The Influence of Vice Presidential Elections. And Christopher, before we move on and talk about some other candidates out there, I want to ask you about Milton Kent's case for Val Demings and what you heard in his case and what you thought about it.
Sure. Well, I think he makes a good case, Professor Kent does, for Representative Demings. She has a lot of strengths as a candidate, and he points to some of those, including her substantial record with regard to policing matters, also her high-profile role in the impeachment process. So, I think those are things that clearly have brought her to the attention of the American public and have put her into contention. Even though she is less experienced than a lot of other people that we're discussing, so she was elected to the U.S. House in 2016. She had tried to run for it before and not won an election. She also did not win an election for mayor at one point, but she had served as police chief for, I believe, it was 3 years and had served for many years prior to that as a police officer. So clearly someone who also has a great personal story behind all this and would be a really compelling candidate in a lot of ways. I think one thing that sticks out to me is how much the home state advantage looms large in these discussions. Mm-hmm. When we think about, for instance, Professor Kent was referring to her record in regard to policing matters. And even recently, she's been prominent in police reform efforts. So has Kamala Harris. Different types of experience, but in terms of that issue coming into play here, other candidates would cover that as well. I think what sticks out is that while she has advantages that could be matched by other candidates, what seems to put her ahead for many people, I don't want to put words in Professor Kent's mouth, but I think part of what I was hearing was that that home state advantage perception. And that makes a lot of sense in some ways, and that there's a long tradition of believing that in the United States. Again, from the research that I've done on this, I don't think that bears out. And it would point me toward people who could have similar advantages, but you know, without regard to the home state issue. So, for example, if we wanted to look at other House members, you know, one name that's really come up in the last, I guess, couple of weeks maybe, has been Karen Bass, representative from California, and she strikes me as a really compelling candidate. She's the chairwoman of the Congressional Black Caucus. She's been in the U.S. House for, I believe, it's 10 years now. She serves on committees and subcommittees dealing with issues of national security.
Former Speaker of the California State Assembly, so long, yep. So long, solid experience in the political world.
Yep. Yeah, first Black woman ever to serve as the leader of a state legislative body, and this was during the Great Recession and so on. So, you know, it's not to say that somehow Val Demings wouldn't be a good choice, but I do wonder if we throw out the home state advantage perception, and there's room for reasonable disagreement on that, but if we were to, I think you'd be hard-pressed to look at the field of candidates and say that Val Demings is the best choice. Mm. I think you could look to others like, for example, Karen Bass or Kamala Harris or perhaps Elizabeth Warren and so on.
I want to talk about another name who's been prominently floated. Stacey Abrams has been talked a lot about as a good vice presidential pick for nearly a year. She's also sort of campaigning in a way for the position since long before the primaries. Here she is on this program, On Point, last August, answering a question whether she'd be interested in becoming vice president.
I certainly would. I mean, I don't want to be coy. There are those who advise me against saying that out loud. But the reality is, of course, the work that I want to see for America, the progress I wanted to see us make, I would be honored to be the running mate of the Democratic nominee.
So that's Stacey Abrams talking last August on Point. And I want to introduce Steve Phillips. He's the host of the podcast Democracy in Color with Steve Phillips and the author of the New York Times bestselling book Brown is the New White, How the Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority. He wrote an op-ed piece for the New York Times about why Stacey Abrams should be Joe Biden's pick for the vice president. And Steve Phillips joins us now. Good to have you, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Anthony.
I'd love it. I'd love to hear your case for Stacey Abrams.
Yeah, so what I do with the piece in the New York Times is I looked at the actual electoral track records of the people who are talked about for the shortlist. And so people are looking at polling, which is predictive, and you know, but I would say limited in that it's what people say they might do in the future. But if you look at these people who have actually run statewide, you can see what their actual appeal and impact is. And Abrams is strongest in the areas where Biden is weakest. And so particularly with young people, his numbers with young people were in like 19% of the vote in the primary process in a number of different states. And then also in terms of African-American enthusiasm, in that he's clearly going to get the lion's share of the African-American vote. But what happened in 2016 was you had a big drop off in the percentage of eligible African Americans who actually turned out to vote. And I would argue that part of that is because they were uninspired and not motivated by that all white ticket. And so Abrams did 30 points better than Obama did in terms of the 18 to 29 year old vote. She won that vote in Georgia. Obama lost that vote in Georgia. She won it by almost 30 points. And no person in the history of this country has gotten more African-American votes as a percentage of the statewide population than Abrams did, the exception of Obama. So her track record is really without peer in terms of those critical constituencies that Biden is actually going to need.
Hmm. She is the former Democratic leader in the Georgia House of Representatives. Of course, she ran for governor. She narrowly lost in 2008. A lot of people feel that she should have won that. She's the leader of an advocacy group, Fair Fight Action, focused on voting rights. Steve Phillips, let me ask you one question, pushing back about Abrams that I've heard raised. She's clearly charismatic, creates lots of excitement, but she's a former state rep. Does she have the experience to be ready to step in on day one and become president? Should something happen to Joe Biden? Should he be elected president?
Yeah, I think it's fundamentally this question of experience, but ultimately it's a question of intelligence and talent. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we're likely to have a similar situation with if Biden wins as we had in 2008, 2009, we have a president walking into an economic catastrophe. We forget now that Obama had very little experience in economics and finance, and that was not his background. That was not his track record. He had been a state legislator until just 2 years before when he ran for the Senate. But clearly, I think we all look back and say that his intellect, his talent, his judgment enabled him to steward the country out of that crisis. And that's what Abrams brings, is the level of talent, intellect, and judgment. And I would argue that those are the most fundamentally important factors in terms of being able to help the country, as well as the fact that we're even talking about her, I would argue, shows the, her talent level. She's been able to build up, you know, a multi-million dollar voter protection organization, Fair Fight. And that's another example of her leadership, her organizational skills, and her abilities. Mm.
Christopher Devine, what do you think of Steve Phillips' argument for Stacey Abrams?
I think it's a compelling case, including in the article. I was pleased to read that, and I certainly don't want to take on anything, but just for some other thoughts to throw in here. With Stacey Abrams, she clearly has an impressive record of experience in what she did, as Steve points to, in the campaign. It was truly impressive, and also her role in the Georgia state legislature. I mentioned earlier that experience is particularly important to voters. And in fact, we show in the book that using data from 2008, at least, and Steve was mentioning the 2008 campaign, I think he's right to point to experience issues there as well. perceptions of Palin or Biden's readiness to be president, mm-hmm. that really did influence how people perceived John McCain or Barack Obama's judgment in particular, whether
so John McCain, president. I just want to clarify for listeners, John McCain picked the former governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin, to be his vice presidential running mate. And that probably didn't reflect really, it didn't end up reflecting well on his campaign.
Yeah. And we show in the book that when people perceived her to be less ready to be president, they also perceived McCain to have worse judgment, and also were more likely to say that he was too old to be president. And in turn, this is what we call indirect effects. It kind of shapes the perception of the presidential candidate, and then it affects how they vote. So those folks became less likely to vote for McCain as a result. In Stacey Abrams' case, as I say, she has an impressive record of experience. It's a thinner resume than other candidates that we're talking about. Or at least it's not as extensive in terms of the types of service. Others who have served in federal office or have had executive experience, at least government executive experience. So I think you can make the case for Stacey Abrams. I'm not saying she doesn't have the experience. My point is, though, that I think Biden would have to spend time making the case. There are others who we've discussed. You know, I don't want to put on one person, but Kamala Harris or Karen Bass or Elizabeth Warren and so on, where I think voters would immediately know that they had the experience to be president. And for someone whose highest office was serving in the state legislature, although it was a very important role within it, she was a leader and she did very well in the gubernatorial campaign. I think Biden would have to spend time making that case. He could make it successfully. I'm not saying he couldn't, but he would have to spend time persuading folks of that. And, you know, that gets to what I was saying about the record on paper versus the perception of it. There can be a gap between those. Sarah Palin, by the way, had more experience in office at that point than I believe Barack Obama by a couple of years, but also John Edwards, who was chosen in 2004 as a freshman senator. And yet and John Edwards' experience wasn't really questioned in that campaign. There could be other factors at play here as well. But I think one of them is that he was basically the runner up in that year's presidential election primary campaign, the Democratic primary. Mm-hmm. And so auditioning for the role, I think, affects perceptions of it. Again, I'm trying to make that distinction between are they qualified? I'm not touching that. I'm talking about will people perceive them as qualified. And, someone else who has more national exposure or has held a national office of some sort, they probably have a leg up in that. Others, you can make the case, but you'd have to spend time making it. I'm not sure that's how Biden would want to spend the time during his campaign.
Steve Phillips, do you have a number two, if not Stacey Abrams? Is there someone else that you're thinking about?
Well, it was interesting what you guys were talking about before in terms of Karen Bass, and that her track record, and what's interesting is, in some ways, she combines the progressive bona fides that Elizabeth Warren has, along with the demographic appeal and reach of an African-American woman. And so that actually was a very intriguing possibility in terms of what she would bring to the ticket. We don't. She's only run in Los Angeles. We don't know what her actual electoral track record would be, but it is a very intriguing addition to the list. Mm.
Well, Steve Phillips, host of the podcast Democracy in Color with Steve Phillips. He's the author as well of the New York Times bestselling book Brown is the New White: How the Demographic Revolution Has Created a New American Majority. Steve Phillips, thank you so much for joining us today. We're really grateful.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it was great having you. Christopher Devine, we've got a few minutes left. I want to come back to another theme, and that is how a vice presidential pick can sort of amplify the message and the profile of a presidential candidate, rather than home state advantage or delivering a certain demographic. It's that they kind of help describe who the candidate is. And I'm thinking of Bill Clinton, for example, picking Al Gore, a young, moderate son of the South, a new kind of Democrat. It helped sort of define who Bill Clinton was. Is there someone out there at this moment that would do that for Joe Biden, or are we just in a different set of circumstances where that's not part of the calculus?
Yeah, that's a great question, Anthony. And you know, I think it points to the fact that there are really a couple different types of strategies, if you want to simplify it at least. You can double down on who you are, or you can try to balance out your weaknesses, broadly speaking. So most of the time we think about ticket balancing. Some of the examples that we've discussed here, especially Barack Obama picking Joe Biden as his running mate in 2008. We present some polling evidence in the book that clearly shows that what people demanded from Obama in a choice was they wanted foreign policy experience in particular, general experience, but especially foreign policy experience. And they got that with Joe Biden, and it seemed to work out really well. Again, from other evidence we present, that seemed to enhance perceptions of Barack Obama's readiness to be president, or at least would signal that he was going to pick people who would he would surround himself with people who would balance out that disadvantage. Someone like Bill Clinton just kind of embraced that role in a pretty unusual way, and just said, "Yes, I'm a DLC moderate from the South, a boomer generation, and so on." And picking someone in Al Gore, that surprised a lot of people. But I think what it did was to reinforce the message that he had in his campaign about a new generation of Democratic leadership after some failed presidential campaigns prior to that, and so on. If we apply that to Joe Biden, he really has a choice to make. If he wants to make a stark choice in this regard, or he could try to split the difference here. Does he want to double down on the moderate profile, relatively moderate profile, that won him the nomination, apparently, seems to be the case? Or does he want to reach out to the left wing of the party, essentially the Bernie Sanders and maybe Elizabeth Warren wing of the party? And, I think all of us can have reasonable judgments about that. They may differ, and they may differ within the campaign. But if he wants to reinforce that moderate profile, he could pick a fellow moderate. He could pick someone like Gina Raimondo, or who I referenced before, the Rhode Island governor. Or he could pick someone clearly from the left wing of the party like Elizabeth Warren. We do show in the book, in terms of perception of the candidate's ideology, that actually that the choice of a running mate affects how people see you ideologically. So here we use some data from 2008 that shows that if you thought, for instance, that Sarah Palin was very conservative, then there was about a 30% chance that you also saw John McCain as very conservative. If you saw her as a moderate, there was only about an 8% chance that you saw John McCain as very conservative. So Biden could shift perceptions of his ideology with this choice.
All right. Christopher Devine, political science professor at the University of Dayton. He's co-author of the new book, Do Running Mates Matter? The Influence of Vice Presidential Elections. Christopher, thank you so much for joining us and helping us sort through what is clearly a big decision coming soon from Joe Biden. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Anthony. Enjoyed the conversation.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.